Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show. And on today's episode, we're going to be looking back at the final pre-season match, a 1-1 draw against Unai Emery's Villarreal at Craven Cottage. The first time that we saw the Riverside stand in action as well. Plenty of chat about transfers today. Fulham still haven't managed to sign a centre-back. There is 5 days until we play the European runners-up at Craven Cottage, and we still only have two senior centre-backs. We'll look at that, plus the rumours that Leno's incoming to Craven Cottage is imminent, and we have a bag full of questions at the end as well. And it is the first kind of Sunday podcast of the year where we vary up the lineup and look back at the last match, and I'm really happy that is the case. I'm joined by Jack Kelly. Hello.
Hello.
Don Betts. Hello.
Hello, mate.
And live from Germany, Archie Rintat. Hello.
Hey, Sammy.
Two pods in 3 weeks. We are blessed.
London buses, mate.
Yeah. More, long may it continue.
So, Archie, see you in what, January?
Yeah.
Dom, I just wanted to quickly get your view, because you've just come back from the Lionesses parade in Trafalgar Square. How was it? I'm very jealous.
No, it was good. I was at the game yesterday at the Lionesses game. I thought it was fantastic. And England going to do double this year. So it's perfect, mate. It was really good. But it's such a different kind of atmosphere. It was so much better organised than the men's Euros last year. It was genuinely ridiculous.
Why? What happened then? Was there something to do with the flair? I forget.
And most importantly, the Lionesses won, which was pretty exciting.
First time lucky for me in a European final, you know. We'll eventually get there. They all went to extra time, but eventually managed to see a team I actually like win. So come on, the Lionesses.
Yeah, it was really, really good yesterday. It slightly overshadowed the 1-1 draw with Villarreal, which I thought was disappointing, really. You know, I feel like news at 10, I don't think that the Lionesses should have been the leading item when Fulham got a late equaliser against Villarreal in a friendly at Craven Cottage. Archie, obviously you were watching in Germany, in England colours. How was that for you behind enemy lines, effectively?
It was fun. I went to take it in an Irish pub so I could at least feel like neutral. I had some support. And yeah, it was a shame not to have English coverage, given the things that I saw that Ian Wright and Alex Scott were saying after the game. But yeah, I have to say it was a bit disappointing that when walking home after it, there was nobody on the street, nor was there anyone really before the game. Like, it was just really dead quiet. And that's despite the fact that the average number of TV viewers on Sunday for the game was 18 million in Germany.
Well, it was literally the highest record attendance that any Euros game has ever had. Mm. It's not men's Euros or women's Euros. It's the highest attendance that any Euros game has ever had. And I think that shows how it was. And I mean, it was great, man. But to be fair, this morning, I agreed to work an early shift this morning. It was probably the worst idea I've probably ever had. the full 2 hours sleep I had before being woke up saying, "Don't you have work in 20 minutes?" I was like,
right.
Maybe. But, you know, right. it was worth it for watching England lift a major trophy. So.
And yeah, like, you know, that figure is 9 million more than when Germany won it in 2013. So it represents some progress on that front. But I have to say, when I looked at the amount of hype that there's been back home, to what you were describing there, Dom, as well, Like, it just doesn't compare, which is a real shame because women's football in Germany has a lot going for it, but it just doesn't have anywhere near the backing that, say, the WSL has in England. So, yeah, I still managed to enjoy and wind a few people up. And one German tweeter told me that I should focus on the fact that Prince Charles had taken money from Osama bin Laden's family instead of enjoying the result, which is one of the weirder barbs I've had on Twitter.
But yeah,
I mean, whatever you need to come up one up in an argument. I mean, putting this back to a Fulham perspective, I can't watch the rise of women's football and always just think, what if with the Fulham women's team and what we had going for us in the early 2000s?
I was speaking to one of my Arsenal friends who watches the Arsenal ladies quite a lot. And I said, back in the early 2000s, like, we had one of the best women's teams in the country at the time. You know, Rachel Yankee left Arsenal to come to Fulham because we were one of the pro teams at the time. And then obviously she went back to Arsenal later on. But I said, it's crazy to see sort of what our women's team was at that point. If you compare us to maybe a team now, you're looking at what Chelsea's ladies are now, pretty much. We were like the only pro team at the time. And it's just a shame to see sort of what's happened to the women's team, really.
That was the first final I ever saw Fulham play in, I think, was the FA Cup final when we lost to Arsenal and we missed a penalty. I remember because I was behind the goal at Selhurst Park. That was frustrating.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's been well documented. Mohamed Al-Fayed, his intentions were in the right place. He just mistimed it. We were just too early to try and go professional. 20 years, really, it's been since Fulham did that and what's now kind of exploded into the WSL. And look, the Fulham women are rising up the ranks, but it's a pretty slow burn. I don't think they have any ambitions yet to become a WSL team. But, you know, they have been moving up the leagues, moving up the ranks, and fingers crossed one day Fulham can get closer to where they were, because I think if you watch yesterday's game and think that women's football isn't going anywhere but skyward, then I think you're kidding yourself, to be honest.
Well, I think the most important thing watching yesterday was a lot of people watching the game, especially in the same, didn't see it as a women's game. They just saw it as a football game.
Of course, that's what it was.
It was an exceptional game of football. I thought Mary Earp, seeing England's goalkeeper, I thought was probably better than a lot of Fulham goalkeepers I've seen when it comes to collecting balls from crosses, especially. So yeah, I think this tournament and yesterday has to be and should be a turning point in when it comes to women's football in England.
Right, let's get this back towards Fulham. And Jack, we haven't done any three-word reviews from yesterday's game against Villarreal. I gave you the honours. So what were the best ones that came in?
It was sort of slim pickings. Because it was a friendly, there wasn't too much in terms of people commenting. But
interaction was not the usual busy heights that it is.
There wasn't the creativity as there usually is.
But there were some decent ones. I picked out three. Okay. Stephen Sheldrake, our very own, he said Fulham's Villarreality check, which is clever, but not quite representative of the game, I don't think.
He wanted the pun more than the actual description of the game, but it's a good one.
I've been in that situation definitely before. Jexon, J-X-E-Z-O-N, with Mbabu fueling fire. I like that a lot. But my favourite is Jay Sampson with really annoying keeper. And if you were at the game, you would definitely know. Really, the keeper was so annoying. So annoying. Okay.
Well, he had a bit of a nightmare in the semi-finals, didn't he? He was the one that gifted Liverpool a couple of goals in the Champions League. So,
gifted is quite a nice way to put it, Sam.
Yeah, interested to hear more about that. Well, Jack, it was a 1-1 draw against Villarreal, which it feels like quite an admirable results. They're in the last four of the Champions League last year. And as I said, if it wasn't for those goalkeeper mistakes in the second leg, they did really push Liverpool all the way in that semi-final. And I thought Fulham had the better of the game. Like, unfortunate that Villarreal scored when they did towards the end of the first half. But Fulham pushed and pushed and made some really nice openings. And I thought were fully deserved of the, not a point, because there's no points, but of a draw.
Yeah, it was a good game of football. It was a good run out for the boys. From the off, we literally attacked 20 seconds in, won a corner. Pereira was lively and Mitrovic got a header over the bar. And Villarreal scored with their first chance of the game, really, in the first half. We were really good and there was a couple of really beautiful pings from Bobby Di Cordova-Reed and Paulinia, like some really nice bits of play. Pereira was very, very lively, like I said, and I was really impressed. Let's put it into context that Villarreal did play on Saturday against Southampton, so they sort of like played half a first team, half a second string team. They would have done the same against the Saints at St Mary's on Saturday as well. But there were some notable players in there. You know, Parejo, the goal scorer, Gerard Moreno came on. There were some really decent players. Their left back was very poor. I can't remember his name, but he was rubbish. And yeah. I was impressed with Fulham, and I thought Mitrovic especially looked very, very like fit and up for it, and as fit as I've ever seen him.
And what was the Riverside stand looking like yesterday, Jack? Obviously, the first time that fans were in the stand, it's just the lower tier for now. The upper tier still a work in progress. Was it weird to see fans in there after obviously a full season of us being there and no fans apart from what was his name, the flagman, Junior?
Junior.
Yes, Junior the flagman. They're good times. I forgot about Junior.
Yeah, the Riverside, it looked good to see fans in there finally. It's been so long since we've actually seen fans in there. I have to say that the stand itself from where I was sitting just looks absolutely magnificent. I think the interior still needs some work done, definitely. I saw some pictures and, you know, there's some things that need to be improved. But I think having fans in there, they were very close to the action, you know, close to the dugout, you know, really good insight into, you know, how the managers behave on the touchline throughout 90 minutes. And they would have seen, you know, Marco Silva and Unai Emery, you know, two very good managers, high caliber managers. And I think it looked good. Obviously, it's going to look a bit weird with a whole empty upper tier for the whole season. But it's nice to have fans back in the Riverside and a nice change of lager choice in Craven Cottage with Camden Hells. It will divide opinion, but San Miguel gone, Camden Hells in, for me, is a huge, huge upgrade.
See, everyone's been slamming Fulham's recruitment over the summer, and little did we know.
There was pictures of that gin, Prosecco and Pimm's bar. I mean, please, can you find something more Fulham than installing that in the new stand?
Sounds a bit of me, that.
Jack, thank you so much for giving me one reason to be cheerful about going back next season, because I've been struggling the last few weeks.
No, really just wait for it. At £6.80 a pint.
Oh, you know what?
I think, right, if you analyse this, properly, though, a pint of Camden Hells in a London pub is probably £6 to £6.50. So I'm thinking £6.80 for a pint in the ground isn't actually too bad.
That is two of the questions that we've got done. BK asked, what is Dom's reaction to £6.80 pint in the Hammersmith end? And Hin said, what are Dom's feelings about £6.80 pints in a tight concourse? I mean, I guess it depends where you drink it, isn't it? Because it feels like quite good value if you're in the nice plush Riverside. But if you're behind the Hammy end and hemmed in, I don't know.
I'm not paying more than £5.50 for a pint.
You're not getting a pint then.
I'll just come down and watch it in the concourse like usual then, you know.
Yeah.
So will you be having half pints then?
I don't think you can get half pints.
You can't get half pints?
I don't really know what they're going to do. Like, are they like putting it across the ground, or is it just in the Riverside stand?
Well, I heard it's in the Hammersmith as well, like the whole ground. And I was in the Johnny Haynes and I walked past the concourse.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, it's a bit like Wembley yesterday. I was like, whatever they're going to charge, I'll pay for it. I mean, it's like, oh, is that £7.50? Yeah, I'll probably pay for it anyway.
What's frustrating is last season, you know, albeit it was San Miguel, the worst lager in the world, you could go to the ground before half two and get a pint for £3.50. And after,
I really hope they continue that.
I hope they do, but I have a feeling they won't.
We've got slightly away from the game here, but I don't mind it.
Are we discussing the game yet?
Archie, I just wanted to get your thoughts on Kevin Mbabu. He was obviously instrumental in Fulham's equalising goal. What a ball from TC round the corner. Absolutely lovely, but a great run from Mbabu. He kind of starts the move and then is obviously pivotal in it, crosses it for Mitrovic, who scored. But yeah, I just wanted to get your thoughts on Mbabu. Obviously came from Wolfsburg, your patch. Well, what's your thoughts on the move?
If you looked at where Cologne is on a map and you looked at where Wolfsburg is on a map,
they're not near.
It's a big patch you've given me there.
I'm saying the whole of Germany is your patch.
Yeah, okay, I'll take that. yeah, it's about a 3-hour train ride. But
still your patch.
So Kevin Mbabu, his best season at Wolfsburg was his penultimate one, not this one which just went by, where he and the rest of the squad had a pretty torrid time. He is somebody who enjoys getting forward, as we saw in that brief stint yesterday. There are big question marks over his technical ability, but physically, he is something to really be mindful of if you're an opponent. And the one question mark I have is, has he got his COVID vaccination yet? Because he was unvaccinated at the turn of the year, along with another Wolfsburg player. I think it was Wout Weghorst. So Burnley's, he's no longer at Burnley. I know he's moved on now, hasn't he?
He has.
So that bit would be a little question mark for me, because COVID is still there and you don't want to lose an important player because of something like that. And yeah, from what I heard, he wasn't necessarily jumping on board that I'm off to Fulham train very quickly, and he did take some persuasion. But as long as he's buying in to the cause, then let's see what he has to give. But yeah, I think there's a few question marks there defensively as well. Like, you know, we can talk about what somebody has to bring going forward, but in the season that we're going to be playing coming up, how often are we going to be able to do that? How often are we going to be able to dominate the ball? I think the equation for this season is going to be so different to the one that we've just played. And I look at the amount of quality that there are in teams around us in the table, not just the top six, but when you see the kind of forward players that, you know, the likes of Crystal Palace have, for example, in Eze and Zaha, and even West Ham. I mean, West Ham's a little bit further up the table, but from having watched them up close last season, I'm kind of looking at that and being like, I love Niskins Cabano, but is he on that level?
But even Southampton, you look at Joe Ribas' goal the other day.
Right, exactly.
he's waltzing through the Villarreal defence in that goal. But obviously, I know they lost the game in the end. But
yeah.
It doesn't sound like Fulham to sign a fullback who can't defend.
Huh.
We do love them. Dom Mitro bags the goal. He's now scored in quite a few preseason games. If I'm not mistaken, I think he scored in every preseason game that he has played. He didn't play in the Nice game, but he scored against Benfica. He scored against Estoril. He's now scored against Villarreal. And I'm just very excited. There's obviously numerous problems across this team. We're going to come on to it. Centre-backs, Harry Wilson out, etc. But if there is one positive that I feel like we can take into this season, I know Archie was searching for positives, it is the fact that Mitro is scoring and it looks like his tail up. And I do think that if you've got a confident Mitro, that is an unbelievable weapon to have, because if you've got a goal a game out of him, I'm not saying he's going to get a goal a game this season, but I'm saying he's kind of potentially going to be...
Golden boot, here we go.
Yeah, can't wait. What I'm trying to say is, good that Mitro's on song, because I think this is the most important thing right now that Fulham have going for them.
I think it might be the most important season in Mitrovic's career, really. You've got, obviously, he needs to prove himself in the Premier League, because you've got a lot of people chatting rubbish that he can't do it in the Premier League, even though Ivan Toney scored about 14 penalties last year and scored one goal from open play. But like, and he's got this season, he's got the World Cup where he's playing Brazil, he's playing Cameroon. Like this season is massive for Mitrovic, because it's like, if he gets, I don't know, let's say 12, 13 goals, and then he does fairly well in the World Cup, let's say Serbia managed to get through that group in the World Cup, he could really just shut all the haters up, really, because, you know, I've talked about it to colleagues and talking about it to mates who support Brentford. I was like, yeah, yes, Ivan Toney did this, did that, but I don't think there's much difference in the regard to quality between the two strikers. Yes, they're probably both at the same level if we're being realistic. You know, both are good penalty takers, both score goals, and I think that this season Mitrovic really needs to prove his haters wrong and show them that he is a Premier League striker, because he is. Like, let's face it, you don't score 40 odd goals in the Championship and not be Premier League quality. Everyone's like, oh, is he the Serbian Timo Pukki? Well, no, he's not. Because he's never done that. Exactly. And also that, you know, when we first came up, what did he get? 12, 13 goals in the Premier League that season? And yeah. I think that a lot of those goals were in the first half of the season as well. basically Ranieri came in and they stifled him. Scott Parker decided to manage the side and didn't play him. So I think this season really is the season where I think Mitrovic is going to prove a lot of his doubters wrong.
Yeah, I fully hope so. And Jack, you said that he looked fit, he looked sharp, obviously, other than the goal, just generally his movement was good. He actually had a bit of a horror miss, didn't he? Was it horror miss? Might be a bit strong, but he...
It's not quite hard on levels in the Community Shield. But yeah.
No, but he had an open goal and hit the bar. Mm. So not the best. So I'm quite glad almost he did manage to get a goal, because otherwise that might have been playing on his mind a bit.
Yeah, no, the ball was whipped in at some pace and he just, you know, made contact with it and it just hit the crossbar. It's one of those ones, quite unlucky. It's good to see that Mitrovic was also dropping deep, receiving the play like he was doing last season. His all-round play is just phenomenal. He's so strong. And even yesterday, it was right at the end of the game. It was just after we made it 1-1. We were attacking and looking to get a winner. And there was like a foul and the referee had played it on. We had the ball outside the box, looking really promising. And then the referee blows for a free kick the other way. And Mitrovic goes mental, gets in the referee's face. He can't believe it. And I'm thinking, bro, it's a friendly, just chill. He gets a yellow card. And actually what worried me yesterday was João Palhinha, the most erratic player when it comes to tackling. He was diving all over the place. He did get himself booked. And apparently if you do get a red card in a friendly, you get a one match suspension, which would have meant he would have been out of the Liverpool game. So he did get pulled off. He got substituted with 10 minutes to go, I think. And he was diving into challenges all over the place. He also went down injured for like a minute and it didn't look good. And then he got up to his feet, thank God. And then there is a point to make that Kenny Tete looked like he pulled up and then he was substituted for Mbabu. But I think they were already about to make that change anyway. And hopefully Kenny Tete is okay. We have a slight issue now with injuries with Harry Wilson, Natty Chabs, and that is very concerning. Very concerning.
Archie's face when you said Natty Chabs.
just imagine if we saw Trevor Chalobah as well. Trevor Chabs and Natty Chabs. Chevy Chabs.
The Chabs brothers. Archie, Harry Wilson out potentially. We haven't actually heard, but I've seen 6 weeks doing the rounds. So that's potentially the first 5 weeks of the season. So that's pretty much ruling
It's pretty
out
much until the international break at the end of September.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a blow. I mean, but it means that potentially Neeskens Cabano, you're up, pal.
Hmm. And yeah, well, Bobby Decord over Reed was looking sharp, but I think he's one of these players where, and there's quite a few of them, you've got reservations, question marks over them, whether they can do it this time, because whilst we competed in our last Premier League season for a lot more of it than we did in the previous one before that, it's whether you're going to be better than the teams around you. It's not just about competing. You have to win games. And to be fair to Harry Wilson, I had, even though he had a great season last year, undoubtedly, I think I have one or two doubts about, you know, does he shoot too often, for example, and can he adapt his game to the Premier League and being ruthless enough? And it's why I was relieved to see Mitro take at least one of those chances. But for him to be out, it just adds even more pressure after Marco Silva's comments after the game and the transfer window that the club has had. And I don't think still lessons have been learnt. Okay, less players on loan. Congratulations, guys. Well done. But how can we be going into the season with 16 senior players, according to our coach? It's a shambles.
Well, good time to bring it up, Archie, because we're going to take a break and afterwards we're going to look at those Marcus Silva comments and work out what Fulham need to do in order to try and save this summer transfer window.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast is Sammy here with Jack Kelly, Dom Betts, Archie Rind, Tuts. Just a quick favour, if you're either listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, we always appreciate getting positive, ideally, reviews of the podcast. You can give us a star rating on Spotify and you can give us a star rating on Apple, but you can also leave a comment on Apple as well. Just always nice. Means that if people are searching for a Fulham podcast, they see the reviews and they go like, oh yeah, that one sounds all right to listen to. I can maybe give that an hour of my time. So hugely appreciated if you can leave us a review. Right, let's get into these comments from Marco Silva after the game. Fully straight out of the Slavisa Jokanović playbook, these. So I'll try and read as much of them as I can. So apparently Silva said, "You are being positive. We have 16 senior players in our squad. No one can compete at this level with 16. I will tell you one more. No one can prepare a season with two central defenders at this level. Everyone that understands football can see that we need at least five or six players. That is clear. If we want to be competitive, these players need help to be competitive in the training every day. We cannot be now 5 weeks in the preseason with two central defenders." And when asked whether Fulham are ready for the Premier League, he says, "These players, they are ready for the Premier League. I congratulate them for the work they have been doing. I'm always behind them. They did fantastic last season. They are working really hard. We as a squad, though, are not ready." And then asked whether arrivals are coming soon, he said, "I expected they arrive in the beginning of the preseason, the first week of preseason, second week of preseason. I hope they can arrive soon. I know that Alistair and Tony are working on it." Jack, you were in the press room when Marco was giving these comments. He did specifically say, "Don't confuse or put Marco is angry. I'm being realistic with you."
He was angry.
It sounds pretty angry to me.
I've never seen someone say that they're not angry by looking so angry. He was furious, really. But it was quite extraordinary. And I was behind the camera and I was trying just not to cry with sadness. So honestly, this is awful. Felt very sorry for him. And then, you know, on my way home, half an hour later, someone from Sky says we're in for four centre backs, and then obviously a couple of hours later, Ornstein says Leno's on his way. And I was thinking, well, that was quick.
It'll be like last year. Someone's probably got COVID. Someone's probably got insert excuse 2, 3, and 4.
Look. What I will say is that I think that Silva's obviously very unhappy with things, and it's the first time he's got to speak to the press at Craven Cottage, you know, for some time since like the Luton game, obviously. And, you know, he's very concerned. 16 senior players, two centre-backs are going into a Premier League season. Next week, we're playing Liverpool, who look very, very good, despite losing 3-0 yesterday to Strasbourg with Harvey Elliott and Fabio Carvalho in the team. So hold that. And I just think that maybe we can get a couple through the door before that Liverpool game. And I think we're only one centre-back away to replace Ream. No disrespect to Ream. And then Leno in goal for Rodak to looking fairly comfortable as an 11, albeit with Harry Wilson in there as well. Obviously he's injured. Manuel Solomon comes in, whatever. But we need players, and I can't believe we're sitting here. I said it to Joe Sanson the other day. I can't believe we're sitting here. You know, 2 years ago, we had the same problem. Need centre-backs through the door. It's too late. We've lost points. We're on 1 point from five games, and it's very frustrating.
Archie, you did a little Twitter thread earlier. It starts with, "Really hope Fulham stay up, but looking at the squad and the shocker they've had with recruitment so far, I'm not holding my breath." Feel free, the floor is yours.
Why? Why can't we learn? Look, after promotion in 2018 and then in 2020, the club claimed, look, we just didn't have that much time to get ready for the season. Nottingham Forest have signed 12 players.
They spent a lot of money as well on good players as well.
Like they have a squad and they've got a squad together which has had a chance to gel in training. These are some of the most important weeks for you as manager, as first team coach ahead of a season. You get a chance to practice attacking patterns, your defensive organization. You get a chance to really try and mold your team. And I feel so sorry for Marco Silva. Because, as you can hear, as much as he protests that he isn't, that he's not angry.
Not angry.
I'm not angry. Maybe he means I'm not angry. I'm furious because he's doing his job with both arms tied behind his back. And if this club put half the energy that it does into PR of pumping out Shahid Khan interviews with the Daily Mail, the Athletic, and the Times about, look at this, look at the shiny stand, look at the big shiny stand we've got. Well, how about A, looking at the ticket prices, spoken enough about that, but B, looking at the squad that the manager has there. And it's not like there've been reports in the last month about Marco Silva being unhappy. That has been there. And still, it's a shambles. How can you get to this point when we all knew in February, mate. We knew in February that we were going up.
I think it was that Blackburn 7-1 in November.
And that's what I mean, though. The sell to players coming in was so clear. Like, you have one of the easiest sells of coming to join a football club in England in the fact that you get to live in one of the nicest parts of London. And like for coming to for bringing in players, that's huge. Like, it's a lot harder to persuade players to go to places elsewhere than London because it is the most attractive destination. So you already have cards in your hand. You already have money, which a lot of clubs have not got or not prepared to spend in the same way. And yet you still manage to blame it on the market, it's just unforgivable. And if Marco Silva turns around and goes, you know what, guys? I'm not going through with this because you have set me up here to fail. I'd get it because he's in such a difficult situation. Sure, you look at the first 11 and you're like, okay. But tell me that first 11 is better than enough teams in this Premier League. And I'm still on the fence. And that's the problem. They've not given him a chance to succeed right now.
I mean, Tom, it's felt like the alarm bells on the centre-back all summer. There just hasn't been that solid rumour that I'm like, and some of the rumours coming out now, like Vestergaard. I mean, I would take Issa Diop, and I could see the sense in that transfer, even though he's obviously had a bit of a disaster at West Ham. I kind of could get on board with that. But Vestergaard, to me, seems like panic stations.
I just don't get why the most obvious position we needed to improve in, bar maybe left back, we haven't improved in. Like, I just don't get it. Like, I just don't get what the sort of transfer strategy was. Like, we've lost all advantage of getting automatically promoted.
But that's the point, Dom. But that's the point as well. You mentioned the transfer strategy. I think that whoever at the club put out this note that we've got offers in for four centre-backs, do you think that makes it look any better? It makes you look even more clueless.
Yeah, it does.
That you are going around a week before the season and you're saying, oh God, we need to get someone in. We've got four offers in.
It's panicking.
This should have been tied up at the start of the summer, not a week before the season where we're going in with a twig to face Liverpool's bazooka.
For example, Issa Diop and whoever these other centre-backs were after, who we've not been linked with, maybe, obviously, people speak about Joe Rowland, but obviously, it looks like he's going to Stade Rennais for £20 million. But, like, it's... like, why are we not linked with these players? Because, let's face it, no Fulham transfers come out the blue. Let's face it. Like, every Fulham transfer, you know, is going to happen before it happens. Like, I was sat in the Algarve looking at Man of Solomon, the other side. Tony Khan will have a little statement at the bottom of every single transfer. I was like, Geezer, you're not doing anything.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, go back to his tweet, 28th of September, 2020. I apologise to Fulham FC supporters for our performance tonight. We've looked to add centre-back since Wembley. I'm sorry we haven't yet, as two got COVID and we lost a free that we thought was closed and had another issue with a fourth centre-back. I mean, I just find it surprising, Archie, that season after season, it always seems to be this position. We never seem to struggle to bring in central midfielders, wingers. I mean, I still think that we've always had a perennial problem of finding a backup striker to Mitrovic. I think that's still the case this season, considering it doesn't look like Rodrigo Muniz is going to be playing that role. It seems like they're trying to find a championship loan club for him, which I do think is the right move, by the way. But it just seems that Fulham just keep repeating the mistakes. And look, there was that famous quote from Alistair McIntosh saying, we don't think we have any lessons to learn. They aren't learning lessons.
I still can't believe it. He is Fulham's answer to Lord Baelish, because somehow he just evades any sort of criticism. Like, sure, Tony Khan is very vocal and like he makes mistakes, but very, like, somehow Alistair McIntosh manages to slide through without taking any flack for 14 years as our CEO. 14 years. I just, like, and he's been named by Marco Silva there as well in this press conference.
Yeah,
it's the first time I think someone's really, like, put him in the mud.
Exactly. And, like, you know, he says, Marco Silva as well, the key quote for me was, everyone who understands football, that is a volley against the people who are making your signings, saying that if you guys understood football, you would have got me a centre back a hell of a lot earlier. But I just, if this season doesn't go well, if we don't stay up, forget Marco Silva. The first people out the door need to be Alistair McIntosh and Tony Khan, because you cannot, they've been incredibly lucky to get these chances again as it is. I can't think of any other football club in England where you would have two promotions and manage to screw up the recruitment as they did. And not just that side of the recruitment. Look at the money that we take in. Like, we've made incredible losses on Anguissa and Seri. Jean-Michel Seri went to be a cult hero last season, but at what cost? He wasn't brought in to do that.
If you look at 100 million we spent, I think the only player we made money back on is Anguissa. And we lost half his transfer value, I think.
A good 10 million.
Mm. I can't remember the last time that Fulham made a profit, other than somewhere maybe from the academy.
I'm always being told as well by other journalists in the game that Alistair McIntosh is one of the best operators. From what?
I don't know what he's operating.
Is he a good operator? I just, there is nothing to bear this out. For getting the Riverside done, I know the role that he played in that was significant.
The thing is, me and you have spoken about this like a Duisburg away in that preseason friendly back in 2018. Like, we generally spoke about this at that point in time, and nothing has changed.
Happy new season, everyone.
I think what's frustrating for me as well is just the lack of a spotlight being shone on the club from the outside, on the issues that matter in this, that nobody has picked up from the outside. I mean, it might make you think about, well, where on earth are all these stories coming from if it's never his fault? But, you know, it might make you think of other things. I don't know.
Well, clearly now, I think a few people are picking up on things. I think after Silva's comments, I think a lot of people are talking about how Fulham and Bournemouth both having, you know, major, major troubles.
Who's their manager?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Scott Parker's comments were hilarious.
Harry Arter's uncle.
I think Scott Parker and Marco Silva are going for joint therapy sessions after this.
Right, we're going to take a break there. We've got some questions, some of it on this topic. So we'll speak to you after the break. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast, the chirpy Fulhamish podcast today with Jack Kelly, Don Betts and Archie Rins-Tutt. Let's get into some of your questions. First one from Mitch Sloan. Jack, how many players are we going to sign on deadline day? I mean, it did make me think when Marco Silva said we need 5 or 6 more, I'm like, oh, bloody hell, deadline day is going to be mental.
Well, for the sake of the Jack and Joe show live, I'd like it to be at least 3 or 4 to make it interesting. But yeah. Realistically, it depends really, doesn't it? Depends on how many we get through before deadline day. There's always something that happens on deadline day. Bobby Deagle over Reed came in. I remember once we signed 5 on deadline day back in 2018. Yeah. There could be a couple. But again, it's quite a long way off. We have no idea. Hopefully for the content and for our own sake, for the club's sake, we get in a couple.
I'm on holiday, by the way, for transfer deadline day, so you're on your own, mate. Just putting it out there. You're going to have to man the ship by yourself.
Absolutely fine.
Dom, H. Aimler is asking about Wolves away. He says, does anyone know if there will be trains available to get back to London after the match? Obviously, there is a Avanti West Coast train strike, which is definitely a fly in the ointment for anyone fancying going to Wolves away. And I'm interested in the answer, Dom, because I haven't booked my travel yet and I need to get it sorted.
So, basically, what everyone needs to do is you need a Marylebone to Birmingham Moor Street, I think it is, return. Those train tickets are always an open return, so you can get any train you want. So it's not easy to rush.
Is that the slow train?
It's 2 hours.
It's 2 hours, so there are slower trains you can get. okay. But no, so get a Marylebone to Moor Street open return, it's not open return, it's like any return you book is always going to be an open return on that train line. Then it's up to you, mate. You can either get the Met. Well, according to Metro, it's a tram. Let's not be around the bridge. You can get a tram which takes from outside New Street on Coronation Street to Wolverhampton, probably about 40 minutes. Or you can just get a cab. I think an Uber is probably about £40. So if you get 4 of you, £10 each. Get that to Wolverhampton and then just get the same thing back.
So it's train to Moor Street, then either very, very, very long tram or a cab.
Yeah, pretty much. I said it's not the worst like train charge I've had to deal with. So
Okay.
No, well, I said good. Just put that, and then just once you get to Birmingham, I said as I put in my planner. I mean, you're going to Wolverhampton, so you don't want to actually go to Wolverhampton. I'm not going because after that England game, I don't actually want to ever enter that place ever again. get once you get to Moor Street, just booze in Birmingham and then get the tram or get a cab, pretty much.
Yeah, I'm even tempted to blimmin' drive it. Might just be easier.
I did that once for that FA Cup game, FA Cup third round replay that we had
in the snow.
Oh, the 3-3 in the snow.
In the snow, yeah. I drove up with Farrell and we nearly crashed twice. And we couldn't find petrol. The excitement aside from the game was
I remember that because I was waiting at the back of the stand waiting for Roddy Ager to score the winning penalty to run to get the last train back.
We could have given you a lift.
But because it had been snowing all day, I was struggling to like stand up because I kept falling over every time I was running back.
Oh, God.
Another question, this one from Rick Cardis. Archie, I'll go to you on this one. He says, what is Tom Kearney's role in this team? Are we going to be able to get the ball from back to front? Seems like we might be missing something in midfield. Now that Leno seems to be coming in and knowing that centre-backs are an obvious need, what's our next biggest need other than centre-backs? There's a couple of questions in there. Let's start off with Tom Kearney's role in the team.
Sure. I think that I'd like to see him. I don't think he's going to be a starter to begin with in that midfield triangle of Reed, Palhinha and Pereira. I think that he's going to have to wait for his opportunity to begin with.
Yeah.
When he does play, I want to see him trust his instinct more. Sometimes with Tom Kearney, and I think that when you're playing in the Premier League, you get punished for this the most. He overthinks, and you can see that. You can see when he has the ball that he has the right thought. It's just he then makes the decision a little too late. So I think that there is a role for him. particularly, you know, that pass for Mbabu yesterday, that shows that he does have the tools to succeed in this division. And I think that actually when he gets stuck in as well, he can be effective, but he just needs to be a little more clinical, I think, in his thinking, and then we'll have a chance. What was the next question?
The next question was, what's our other biggest need other than goalkeeper and centre back?
I think that there is a lack of real terrifying pace on the wings.
Solomon?
Solomon for one, but we can't rely on Solomon alone, I think. Mm. Like for all of the skills that Niskins has, I think that, is he going to be able to dart past players, or is he going to have to box clever? I think it's the latter. So I'd like to see another player who has the ability to beat their opponent in a one-on-one situation, a la Ademola Lookman, for example, who is going to Atalanta, sadly, albeit, you know, making sure that he never takes penalties again. That would be probably my next problem area, would be making sure that we have players who can help create chances, who have these moments of magic, because I don't think that whilst I like the determination and work rate of Bobby Decourt over Reed, I don't think he's got the ability to out-trick someone and dance past them. And we need those players who can do something. And I think there's a lack of them in the squad right now.
Yeah, we saw Bobby on the wings last season, didn't we? He went through that period towards the end of the season where he deputised for Cabano quite a bit. And he's effective. He's a very intelligent player. And I think he makes nice moves. But just that lack of raw pace, really, you could tell, even against championship right backs, he was rarely terrorising them, if ever. So that brings me on to my next question, Jack, which is from Alex at Pure Power. He says, do we need another winger to cover Wilson's injury, or can Stansfield cover as backup until he's fit again? Yeah, Luke Harris and Jay Stansfield both got on the pitch yesterday, combined nicely and had some nice touches. Feels quite risky though for them to be our backups. But then again, you know, we've spoken numerous times over the years how youth needs an opportunity and does need a pathway. So maybe this is the moment for them to be cover.
Yeah, and we've been quite active with the youth, sending them out on loan this summer, especially. Jay Stansfield came off the bench. He played on the wing. It was quite interesting to see. But in terms of Harry Wilson being injured, so our wingers now, first team wingers, are Manuel Solomon, Bobby Decourt over Reed, and Niskins Cabano. Will they dip into the market to cover for a position that's going to be out for 5 weeks? Probably not, for the sake of FFP. And you know, we are tight on that, definitely. So I think that we'll probably rotate between those three, and yeah, maybe Stansfield might get a few minutes here and there. In terms of the Liverpool game, you'd probably start with Bobby Decourt, David Reed on the right, and Solomon on the left, depending if his match sharpness is all there. If not, Niskins Cabano. It's frustrating because Harry Wilson's a very, very key player, and to have him out at the beginning of the season is really frustrating. But we do have a little bit of cover. I don't think we need to dip into the market in that position, personally.
Final one for you, Dom. This is from S. That's all we've got. Tim Ream, Darwin Nunes, how, why?
I'll start rolling it up now. No, I just don't understand. I just don't understand how we've got to this stage. Like, genuinely. Like, how we got to the stage where we're going to watch Darwin Nunes just put Tim Ream in a, you know, role.
I'm going to challenge all of you. I really hope that Tim Ream does all right against Liverpool.
I think everyone does.
So much is being made.
I've got no issue with Tim Ream being good next season. I just don't think it's going to happen.
No one's saying that we don't want him to do well, Sammy. I think it's just also trying to be realistic about, you know, look, there's no player in this squad I like more as a human being than Tim Ream. than Tim Ream, and how he leads the team. It's just, I think that the step up and the gap from the Championship to the Premier League is huge.
If you look at how Darwin Nunes played in the Community Shield, and he was like battering like Nathan Ake, and I can't remember who was the other centre back for Man City, but. Like, he was, like, battering them. Like, as soon as he came on, I thought he was phenomenal. But I don't know. Like, it's 12:30 kickoff. Hopefully, just.
I hope he scores and Millie rocks in front of the Scousers.
I couldn't be. I would love
what,
nothing.
What, Tim Ream? Yeah. It's just same, yeah.
I don't know. I do see, obviously see the panic and stuff like that, but I'm just hoping, and maybe it's blind faith, but that it will all be, it will be okay. I don't think it's
Sammy,
the perfect solution. I would love
to have your positivity like, at some
Sammy,
point.
We'll be the first person, if he sticks him in his pocket, the first person to tell you, you know what? Got it. Hands up. Got it wrong. But yeah, I mean, I'm at least encouraged that as much as, again, we're great at having great human beings, but the football side, you know, not being the best. I look at Dennis Odoi, I'm just relieved that I don't have to watch him turning back towards goal when marking a player this season against Premier League opposition.
I wouldn't mind seeing Marriott sort of just being in goal for Fulham.
Could we sign Millie Bright?
Yes.
Yeah, she can spread a ball. Like, her passing range is phenomenal.
Sign her up. She hasn't got a game at the weekend, has she?
Yeah, get her in the centre mid. Get Mary Earps in goal. We're staying up, mate.
It's coming home.
Hashtag right. Sign Millie Bright.
It already came home, so we're fine, mate.
Oh, by the way, I walked past Mitrovic yesterday in the Johnny Haynes, and he smelt incredible. Like, incredible.
That's what,
like,
we want to see.
Of what, though? What?
Just like a perfume. It was a cologne of some sort.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, all perfumes aren't the same.
I have no idea.
I was looking for a divine sign that should I end the show. I think that possibly is the moment right there, Jack.
Can he smell like an FC Cologne? That's what he's asking.
Yeah, from cologne, of course. Sure. Why not?
Right, that'll do for the podcast today. It's been... you know, I think we're all a bit frustrated. I think we're all anxious. I think we just need the season to start now.
But Valanis is one, so that's all.
Yes, yeah, not all is okay with the world. And if
could we delay it till we sign a centre back?
What, the whole season?
Yeah.
Just one. I can't deal with the pre-season stress anymore. I just want to get that first game out of the way. Fingers crossed it's just like not an absolute shambles, and then we can kind of move on, because I think the whole fan base is so tense right now. Rightly so, but it's a lot at the moment. All we need to do is name the podcast. So Jack, what would you like to go for out of the three word reviews that you picked?
Well, the pure obvious one is to go for Jackson's Mbabu fueling fire.
Very nice indeed. Yeah, it was good to see that link up yesterday. I know that not everything is great with the club at the moment, but hey, there's some football back on Saturday. We'll be back at the cottage. Hopefully the sun will be shining, and hopefully we can make an impact. Right, on Thursday's podcast is going to be myself, Jack and Peter with a Premier League preview. We'll be doing our predictions for the rest of the season, and fingers crossed between now and then we might have a signing or two to talk about. We'll wait and see on that one. Thank you to my guest today, Jack Kelly. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sammy.
Don Betts, thank you.
Later, mate.
And Archie Rintout, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good start to your week. Hopefully we'll sign a centre-back in the next couple of days. Come on, you Whites. Yeah.